We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Steve Stoke.
When I started out and Harry was my partner, he said to me, you will find your identity. It turned out that I felt that my identity was going to be to teach as many people as I could the game of baseball.
White Sox TV analyst.
Being an analytics guy, I would have known that a sub-6-foot-tall right-handed starting pitcher in the major leagues, the odds were infinitesimal. But if there was a contest that had a winner, I could never understand why it shouldn't be me.
Social media guy.
A lot of people love you, especially the people you haven't blocked.
I've been blocking more than Tom Brady's line.
Steve Stoke with Bernstein and Holmes on The Score.
Gee, I wonder if Steve Stone has any thoughts on the White Sox today.
I don't know. Maybe we should find out. Maybe
we should probably ask him.
We probably should. Steve Stone is on Twitter at Steve Stone, and he is on the Bernstein and Holmes show on The Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. It was lovely to see you last night, Steve, and shake your hand once again. And everything about last night was a delight, except for the outcome of that game. And I saw one baseball team that impressed me a whole hell of a lot more than the other one.
Well, first of all, let's do a little housekeeping first. Congratulations on the new show. They have paired two Giants. It's almost like Martin and Lewis getting together. Oh, wait, they got together. Anyway, I saw you last night, Dan. You look terrific. You're 64 years old today. Happy birthday. Congratulations. I got to tell you something.
Thanks so much.
Keep eating those lamb chops, and you're going to be top of the line into your 90s.
Good recommendation. I probably wouldn't have doubled back, but yes, the mustard-crusted lamb chops were well-turned.
Stoney knows where all the good food is. What did the final count of the T-shirts end up being, Stoney?
Well, look, and, you know, I've mentioned this many times, it was not really a contest. It was one of those situations where everybody wins. You
yes.
get some wonderful-looking T-shirts. White Sox Charities got a great deal of money. I mean, a surprising amount of money for people who showed their generosity. All that money goes to helping the community, which is something great. And, you know, it's one of those things where it really isn't a competition per se. It's one of those things where you both pitch in, you try to sell whatever you can. At the end of the day, the winners are the fans and the people who benefit from White Sox Charities. And I think, pending a recount, Jason won.
All right, look, one more silly question before we get to the real stuff.
Sure.
How many hot dogs were in the duffel bag and how many did Jason eat?
Well, I believe when looking at that bag, to my untrained eye for volume of hot dogs, I'm thinking in the neighborhood of 40 to 50, which gives you an idea how nice those duffel bags were and how many hot dogs fit in there. Jason, because the game was particularly long, I think minimum he had was 5. And I think the only thing that kept him from eating more was that there was so much going on in that game, so many twists and turns, so many teams, you know, scoring, going ahead, only to fall behind, to go ahead, to fall behind. I think that limited his intake. But I think left to his own devices, he could have probably eaten most of that bag.
Okay, so now let's talk about last night and some of the things that were going on in last night's game. Dan and I were having a discussion earlier, and maybe we're wrong on this, but we had felt like if you have a player that doesn't play a position that often, especially center field, the default setting for that player would be play him deep, not play him shallow. we were struggling to figure out why the outfield defense was aligned the way that it was. What did you think about it?
Well, I think every one of these outfielders has a card. You know, this is the day and age of analytics in the game, and they figure out via the power of a guy and his propensity to the direction he's going to hit it and pretty much how far he hits it, they show you exactly how many steps you should play back, how many steps you should play to the left or right, depending on who's hitting. And so there's that aspect of it. And you're right. Look, to sit and blame this on Leury is not correct, simply because he isn't an everyday center fielder. He can play center field. He's just not one of those guys you see out there every day. He's not Adam Engel, who's injured. He's not Luis Robert, who has sore legs. He's not anybody else, but he is Leury, who fills a lot of gaps. That being said, you've got a manager and you've got a lot of coaches sitting in that dugout. And when they look up and they see that Leury is not as deep as the guy on the right of him and the guy on the left of him, and you know the heart of the order is coming up. They've got three guys with double figures in home runs, and they all hit back to back to back. You got to figure that Mountcastle and Hayes and Santander, these guys can hit the ball a long way, or they wouldn't have double figures in home runs, especially since Baltimore has moved the fences back some 26 feet. Leury was playing too shallow. It was plain and simple. And you're right. If you have a guy that's not experienced, most guys can come in much easier than they can go back. That being said, if you play back, maybe you give up singles, you just don't give up doubles and triples. And so I think that on further review, they will see that there were some mistakes made last night and understand that this team has its challenges. We know the physical aspect of what's been going on with the White Sox this year. And so when you look at everything involved and you're not to your full complement of manpower, you're going to have to do things a little bit better. This defense only has two teams in the league worse than they are, which means, and both of those teams, by the way, are completely out of the races. The Sox are not. They're 4.5 games back. They're sitting right now as we speak still with a fine shot, and we've got a lot of Guardians and a lot of Twins coming up. And the Guardians have Boston coming up and New York coming up, and they play the Twins also. So there's still plenty of time. There's still plenty of room. But you can't make mistakes. Physical mistakes are going to happen. You can't allow mental mistakes to get you beat in the ballgame. And we've seen it with Tim coming back. Quite obviously, he is much less than 100%. But he's good enough to come back and help this team offensively. The footwork isn't great because I don't think he quite trusts the strain growing yet. And you saw him come off the bag at first base. The end result is he did get picked off first base twice. And one of the things that these coaches do, besides waving in runners on occasion or taking their gear when they get to first base, as soon as that first baseman moves with runners on first and second, you have got to shout your lungs out for the guy to get back to the bag. I don't know, because we didn't replay, if there was that message conveyed to Tim on the second time. But as soon as Guerrero even twitches toward the bag, first base coach has to be screaming, get back. Tim was out by a good deal in that play. And those little things will eventually cost you games, especially when you're not going to pound the opposition because your offense is depleted.
You mentioned Tim Anderson and how he's playing at less than 100%. I'm going to give you a list here of names that we went through, sort of compiled earlier in the show, in no particular order. Anderson, Jimenez, Robert, Vaughn, Abreu, Grandal, Moncada, Engel. I may be missing some.
Did you do Robert Vaughn on purpose?
No, I didn't, but nice catch. That is a list of White Sox players who at one point or another, if not now, then at another time, have been active, playing, but yet told that it's okay to not be 100% and or necessarily go 100% at something because of soreness, because of returning from an injury, because of risk of injury, where essentially they have been allowed to play at less than full speed because that's what the team needs of them. Where are you with the idea of doing that, first of all, and then this many players having that kind of special dispensation?
Well, certainly there's a lot, and that's a question of, I think, a lot of bad luck. That's part of it. I think one of the things that you realize is because of a 162 nature of baseball, you're going to have to be out there sometimes on a daily basis, playing through some injuries, getting nicked up. You have to understand as a player what you can play through and what you can't, when you are risking further injury and when it's just soreness. There's some guys that have a higher pain tolerance than others. There's some guys who don't have a history of injury. There's a lot of guys who play through whatever it is they have to play through. And, of course, on the White Sox, the poster boy for that is Jose Abreu. As you know, the hip is bad, and yet he got two hits last night. He's still helping the ball club doing what he's doing. He's been forced to DH because they want to take some of the pressure off that hip. But that's one guy at one end of the spectrum. Then you have some other guys at the other end of the spectrum. And one of the things that you have to kind of figure out is that when you're putting together your baseball team, you have to figure out maybe by the history of the guy, does he have a history of missing substantial amounts of time? If that's the case, sometimes it forces you to do something that you wouldn't ordinarily do. That's how trades are made. That's how certain things are considered when you're putting together a baseball team. We seem to have an inordinate amount of guys who do have some leg issues for whatever reason. I don't know exactly what it is, but I'm sure that there's a breakdown of exactly why this guy is not 100% most of the time. I think we see some teams that have players that go out there and play quite a bit. Whit Merrifield comes to mind for Kansas City. I really never seen him dogging it. He is a guy who steals bases. He plays the outfield. He plays the infield. And he plays every day. That's one type of player. You have other players who they get nicked up and suddenly they're not playing quite as well. I do know one thing, and this is a byproduct of the way baseball is, and we can't indict baseball because of that, but it is a fact. As multi-year contracts, especially multi-year big money contracts, have come to be the norm in baseball, as opposed to the one-year contracts that we all used to play on. I had one multi-year contract my entire career. That was the last one I signed. When you're on a one-year contract, you have a tendency to play through a lot of injuries and play a little bit harder, perhaps, because you know what you're going to make next year is directly dependent on what you're making this year. We also didn't have agents, and I can't blame it all on them, but agents will tell certain players, you know what, if you're nicked up, go on the IL for a couple of days. Don't play hurt because you're in the, you know, the second year of a five-year, whatever the case may be. Sometimes you're in the last year of a five-year. Those guys have a tendency to play a little bit better, and maybe the poster boy for that was Daryl Strawberry. You take a look at his option years, and you realize they're magnificent. Why? Because he was going to be a free agent. He got paid a great deal of money if he had a great year. So that incentive, that financial incentive, is something that we see in baseball quite a bit. But when you take that financial incentive away, when you give a guy a long-term deal for a lot of money, you got to be sure that the guy you're giving that to is going to still give you everything he has on a daily basis. And I look back at Andre Dawson, who got a big contract. He left it all on the field every day. Look at Ryan Sandberg, got a big contract. Didn't have to worry about him hustling because he did all the time. But you have to know, and maybe there's some different players now, but you have to know which guys you can give that long-term deal that gives them financial security, and they will still have that intestinal fortitude, that pride, whatever it takes to get out there every day and give you everything they got.
Danny Mendick is lost for the season with an ACL tear, which is terrible. I mean, he's been doing so well in the stead of Tim Anderson. He said that there was miscommunication on that play. There's been a ton of that, Stoney. Like, the last two seasons, there's been a ton of that when it comes to outfielders and outfielders with the White Sox. How do you go about fixing that inside of a season? Is it something that can be done?
Well, I think, first of all, there are certain plays that are easier for an outfielder, and you have to explain to them that communication is the key to avoid nasty injuries. You're not going to ever completely avoid them because we do see them a lot around baseball. We just don't see them quite as frequently as we see it with the White Sox. And somebody has to yell for the ball. And that one was kind of in the middle of no man's land, but there was another factor there. That is, Haseley and Mendick didn't play on the same side of the infield and outfield. I don't know if they ever played the same side. So So it's two guys unfamiliar with one another. Normally, on that ball, the outfielder just yells and yells, says, I got it. If he catches it, that's fine. But you avoid a major injury that takes a guy who is very productive and takes him out of the lineup for the remainder of the season. That was very costly. And there have been a lot of these that are very costly. And unfortunately, we see a lot of guys run into one another. I mean, Eloy in left field routinely ran into Luis Robert. My feeling is you lock Eloy in one of those booths that you test hearing, and you have a recording of Luis Robert's voice. And Eloy gets very familiar with the way Luis Robert sounds. And when he hears, I got it, he doesn't run into him. That's not good. And so we've seen a lot of that. You see a lot of infielders, a lot of outfielders colliding.
You actually pointed it out a couple of weeks ago where Josh Harrison had done it the right way, where he heard the outfielder, I forget who it was, but it may have been Vaughn, and he veered off. Not only did he stop, he veered off so that it wouldn't be in the path of the outfielder.
Well, he did it twice. The first time he actually ran so very close to Vaughn that it was almost disturbing, but Andrew was able to make the catch. The second time he veered off. And again, it's guys getting familiar with one another. That infielder, that shortstop or second baseman, getting very familiar with the voices of his outfielders. And because of the noise of the crowd, the outfielder literally has to scream. And he screams, I got it. Then the other guy gives away. And, you know, whether the guy catches it or not, they both live to fight another day. They're not lost for the season.
I want to get back to the point that you made about the self-motivation of players, whether on long-term contracts or not. And, Steve, I've learned over the years it's hard to criticize on-field effort that you see in baseball, because it's not that kind of game. It's not a game you can play harder. And sometimes the guys who look like they're grinding out there are—it's what they call eyewash in baseball. And this is your Adam Eatons and your Nick Swishers and any other guys you want to add to this list. What I want to know: do you think the White Sox? I don't want to say are playing hard enough. Do you think they're working hard enough?
Yeah, I mean, you see them out there every day. You see the guys playing as hard as they can on a nightly basis. I mean, look, when you see what this team has done in, I don't know, take the last 2 weeks, and you'll see that this team has come back in games that sometimes you believe they should be left for dead. But they never really quit in the course of the game. And there's certainly... It certainly shows you as a team the character of these guys, because they're not going to lay down. Doesn't matter how many runs they're down. They keep on coming back. They find a way to get the tying run to the plate in the late innings, and that part of it is good. However, if you've made a couple of egregious mistakes along the way that puts you in that position consistently, no team, except for the Yankees perhaps, can come back consistently and win. The Yankees actually have a winning record in games where they've trailed. It's almost remarkable. But you take a look at a team that is playing 743 baseball. They're playing so far and away better than anybody else in the American League that it's not even close. And Houston is a very good team, but the Yankees were able to come back on them in what a lot of people think is the preview for the American League championship. I mean, those are two very good teams. Right now, the Yankees stand out. Right now, they've had their injuries. They haven't had that many major injuries, especially to their productive players. They're scoring a whole lot of runs, and they're doing a lot of things right. The pitching has been magnificent. They actually field the ball, and that's something the Sox have had a problem with over the last few years. It has not been a good defensive team, and that's one of those things. I mean, if you bring back essentially the same players that have not been good defensively, it's hard to assume they're suddenly going to get good. So then you have to try to get to the point where you outscore the opposition. And we find out in the weather of Chicago the first 6 weeks of the season, there's certain guys that just don't produce quite as well as other guys. This weather is abominable to play in. We have wind chill factors sometimes into the beginning of June. It's been a most amazing year, but the team doesn't produce early like they produce when it gets warm. Right now they're scoring a whole lot of runs, and sometimes they're actually able to overcome their mistakes, both mental and physical. But this team is making far too many mistakes. I still believe they can win the division. I take a look at Minnesota. I think eventually the pitching does them in. I take a look at the Guardians, and to me, when I look at their pitching philosophy and the guys they put out year after year, I look at their front office when I understand that some of those Cleveland front office people went to Minnesota. Some of those Cleveland front office people went to Toronto. both of those teams are very good teams. Cleveland seems to be able to do it. Sometimes they do it really well. They have a guy who manages exceptionally well in Terry Francona. They have a front office who seems to be able to choose guys who develop into pretty good pitchers. And they make contact, they run the bases, they catch the baseball. And so right now, are they overwhelming? No, they're not. But they've won 8 of their last 10. They're sitting there tied for first place. It's a team that I don't think is going to go away, because I think the fundamentals that they do on a daily basis will keep them competitive, certainly. And right now, they're a plus 36 in run differential, which to a certain extent, I think, is a bit overblown as far as how a team is going to do. But that team is just that. It's a team, and year after year, and I don't think it's a coincidence, because they understand pretty much how to play the game, they usually wind up at or near the top of the division.
I want to fix Lucas Giolito. And I'm looking at his numbers. And the last game, the fastball averaged 92.3 miles per hour. He maxed out at 94. And over the last month, that's been about where he's been. He's losing velocity. I know that you were concerned with pitchers, all pitchers, that at some point that dead arm period was going to happen because of how they ramped up into the spring training, the abbreviated spring training. Is there something that's not happening mechanically? Like, is his leg drive good? Like, what do you see when you're seeing him struggle to find that velocity that makes his changeup a much more dangerous pitch?
Well, what I see is I see a guy who's not hitting his spots. And I also see a guy, and the league is, you know, where we always talk about pitchers adjusting to hitters. You know, a guy comes up, it's like Suzuki with the Cubs. He came up, he tore the league apart. Then all of a sudden they said, well, you know, he's seen a lot of off-speed pitches in Japan. Let's see if he can hit this inside fastball up under his hands. The answer was he couldn't. Now he's gotten hurt. He's going to come back. I think he's going to be a good hitter. But the league adjusted to him. We don't talk near as much about the hitters adjusting to pitchers. Lucas uses a lot of changeups. And sometimes the smarter hitters, the guys that come up in situations where they can really hurt you, sometimes they're sitting there looking for that specific pitch. In the case of Lucas, he throws a lot of changeups. So when he does throw a changeup, it's got to be a real good changeup each and every time. Bichette came up with the bases loaded, got a changeup, did not move his hands, did not move his feet, was right on it, hit it out of the ballpark. And this is a guy that went up, in my estimation, obviously looking for an off-speed pitch. We've seen that a lot with Lucas. Sometimes you just have a brain cramp. Alejandro Kirk was hitting everything in sight, line drives all over the ballpark. Lucas goes to 3-0 on him and grooves a fastball at 92 right at his knees, and he hits it out of the park. You got to believe that Kirk is going to be swinging 3-0, and you have to adjust accordingly. You can't throw a get-me-over fastball. Now, maybe Lucas was trying to throw that low and away on the black. I don't know. But you can't afford to make mistakes in that situation. Johnny Cueto has been magnificent this year. And so he's in a situation where he's got Adley Rutschman up. Not a home run hitter. He'd hit one in his career. But he pitched to him knowing that the three guys up behind him all were hitting either below 200 or right at 200. Rutschman hits a two-run homer. Sox are down two. He gets the next three guys out relatively easily. He made a mental mistake throwing to a one guy. You know, this guy was the first pick in the country. He can really play. The fact that he hasn't really burst out yet, it doesn't really mean he can't and he's not capable of it. And he hit a two-run homer. Johnny's a veteran. He probably would want to rethink that. Now, maybe he threw the right pitch. He threw a cutter or a slider, couldn't get it in. He hit it out of the park. But the point is, maybe pitch this guy carefully. Make sure you throw him something out of the strike zone. He still is a young hitter. And take advantage of the three guys behind him who really can't hit at all. And that really wasn't the case. So again, a little mental mistake by a guy who's been around forever cost you two runs, and as we know, the Sox were never able to come back from that one, although they had their chances. And it was magnificent outfield defense by the Orioles. We saw guys positioned particularly well. I mean, Mullins went and got two balls in right center field that were magnificent. Santander got one in left field, great play. But Hayes had the play of the night, and he goes over into foul territory, and he makes a spectacular play on a ball that would have been a two-base hit. Then he throws out Sheets at the plate. You got a guy with truly an above-average arm, and you got a runner with truly below-average speed. It all set up for the fact that if he makes a decent throw, he's going to be out. And he was out from here to Gary, Indiana.
Yeah, Lawrence and I were debating that earlier. In real time, considering who's coming up later, the desperation of this team right now is informing some of these sends, and it's changing the math for me because I keep thinking, like, what are the chances the White Sox are going to string together enough positive outcomes that maybe you're better off just hoping the catcher drops the throw at some point? I don't like where they are on the risk curve now in some of these decisions, because I just feel like, you know, what the hell? When else are they going to score?
Well, look, I mean, that's a valid point, and I'm sure that all goes into the equation. Joe McEwing is a very prepared guy. He knows how everybody throws in the outfield. He knows how every one of our runners run. And he's decided to send him, and I think depending on who you care to listen to, is either the 13th or the 14th guy he's had thrown out at the plate. But he's been very aggressive this year. He's taking some opportunities. And when the team isn't hitting the ball out of the ballpark, and the reason why the Sox are where they are at home, which is 15 and 19, is that they're being out-homered at home. You cannot allow yourself to be out-homered in your home ballpark if you have a ballpark that's conducive to home runs. Unfortunately, some of our home run hitters are either not playing or not producing. We don't have one guy in double figures in home runs. Granted, the injury to Aloy was really costly. He was going to hit some home runs. Grandal, the second half of last year, certainly hit a lot of home runs. Moncada is capable of hitting home runs, and there's not any of them that are right now able to play. So maybe when they come back, maybe the Sox can take advantage of a ballpark tailored for offense when they don't seem to have a whole lot of it as far as home runs are concerned.
Stoney, as always, we thank you so much for the information. I am looking forward to looking good and resplendent in the color of royalty, in purple. When I get my Steve Stone t-shirt, I will wear it loudly and proudly.
Well, Lawrence, we applaud you. Once again, you know, it wasn't a contest. We applaud you for just going at it, you know, and giving to a worthy cause.
Yes.
And, you know, we don't really care about competition. I mean, you know, that's usually what the losers say and the winners say shut up and deal. So that's kind of the deal. Dan, have a happy birthday. And
thank
guys,
you.
Have a great show. I know it's a great pairing.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.